From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. And by the way, in the Central and East Coast time zones, happy St. Paddy's Day to you. At the end of the program tonight, a little surprise for you. Make sure you're standing by for that. Here's what's happening. An incredible story. Officials are reviewing documents that suggest that Osama bin Laden, before his death, obviously, urged his Al-Qaeda network to attack the aircraft of President Obama and General David Petraeus. The directive was first disclosed in a report last summer after a CIA-led Navy SEALs team took down bin Laden. According to the Washington Post, new details of these plans have emerged. According to the report, bin Laden wanted the president killed so that the unprepared, in his words, Vice President Joe Biden would become president. That was what he wanted to do. North Korea has announced that it would launch a rocket carrying a satellite next month, sparking widespread condemnation and U.S. threats that it could put much-needed food aid in jeopardy. The United States, Japan, and South Korea said the plan announced just 16 days after North Korea agreed to suspend long-range missile testing in return for U.S. food aid would breach a U.N. ban imposed after previous launches. We'll see what happens there. In Connecticut, downloading music, movies, ebooks, and apps could soon cost Connecticut residents more as lawmakers there consider a tax on digital downloads. The bill proposed by the General Assembly's Finance Review and Bonding Committee would have consumers pay over 6% sales tax on any electronic transfer. Supporters say the bill would level the playing field for brick-and-mortar retailers in the state who are already required to charge Connecticut sales tax to consumers who purchase these products directly in their stores. There's Lauren Weinstein with us, expert on the Internet. It's just a matter of time, Lauren, that this is going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, various states have been moving in this direction, not just with digital downloads, but with all kinds of intangible products, things that you can't go out and physically touch. And states are strapped for income. Obviously, there's budget problems all over the country. I think one of the things you have to be concerned about, though, if you're a state legislator, is the law of unintended consequences, because there's always the possibility that as you bring additional charges and fees onto these things, you increase the probability that people will go to pirate sources for these, which, of course, they can do. That's already a problem. Every dollar that you bring up the cost of these things is probably going to drive more people to illicit sources. Obviously, if they go to an illicit source, nobody's going to be making money on these kinds of intangible products, not the state, not legitimate businessmen, only pirates. So there's always consequences when you raise taxes these ways.
Is it fair for companies like Amazon.com to have to pay sales tax eventually?
You know, there's arguments on all sides of this. Amazon has been very aggressive fighting the concept of sales tax for a long time, and still broadly now. The concept was that if you didn't have a physical nexus in a state, you couldn't charge sales tax in that state. And this kind of all blew apart when you had these complicated online relationships, and entities like Amazon have like agents. They will have people that will be agents who are not actually employed by the company, but they're sort of operating for the company. Mm-hmm. So various states have gotten concerned about that, thinking that that's an end run. It's very complicated. I think in the end, there's probably going to be broad sales tax.
I think so, too.
But it's going to require a lot of technical work because the sales taxes are so complicated. But I think it's coming eventually.
There's just too much money out there, Lauren. The states have to get it.
They're going to get it one way or another.
You got it. Thanks. Lauren Weinstein, have a great weekend. Have a great St. Paddy's Day. We're green. Okay, now, as you know, we're interested in health-related stories on this program. We give you tips, inside information, cutting-edge news. If you eat white rice a lot, here's a suggestion. Eat brown rice. Here's why. Health researchers are finding now a troubling link between higher consumption of rice, white rice, and type 2 diabetes, a disease that in some countries becoming an epidemic. Further work is needed to probe the apparent association in diets that are notoriously high in sugar and fats. They should remain, they say, on the no-go list. What they have found is white rice is likely to increase the risk of type 2 diabetes at high consumption levels. Simpler just to eat brown rice. They're also saying that eating more blueberries, apples, and pears may be linked to lower risk of diabetes. These fruits are loaded with flavonoids, a natural compound present in certain fruits, vegetables, and grains, in which research has tied it to health benefits such as a lower risk of heart disease or cancer. So there you go there. New research has found a link between the increase in the death of honeybees and insecticides used to coat corn seeds. Since seed coating with insecticides was introduced in the late 1990s, European beekeepers have reported severe colony losses in the period of the corn sowing. Beekeepers from the United States, where one-third of honeybee hives disappear each year, to China, have also experienced mass deaths in recent years. For 5 years now, our reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, earthfiles.com, has been reporting on the missing columns of honeybees. Here's Linda right now. I'm getting her reaction to this story. What do you think, Linda?
Well, George, the coating on those seeds that you just mentioned are neonicotinoids. And you heard me using that word 5 years ago.
Way before anybody else did, Linda.
Well, right back in February 2007, right at the beginning of the mysterious colony collapse disorder when it was just being discovered, the very first honeybee grower that I interviewed for both Coast and EarthFiles.com was Dave Hackenberg, who was owner of Hackenberg Apiaries in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. And Dave and his family had been raising honeybees for half a century when he was shocked to find in the winter of 2006 to 2007 that he lost nearly 80% of his colonies. They disappeared and died. There were both dead bodies and no bodies. And for the first time in his life, Dave went into debt to stay in business. And in our interviews about this honeybee crisis back then, Dave Hackenberg told me, and this is a quote, "We are trying to stay as far away from all those nicotine-based insecticides as we can until we figure out what this whole problem is about." And that's a close quote 5 years ago. Well, nicotine-based insecticides produced by Bayer of Germany came on the world markets first, as you pointed out, in the late 1990s, and it didn't take long for farmers to notice that honeybee populations declined where the neonicotine-based insecticides, such as imidacloprid back then, were used. That's why Dave Hackenberg and other beekeepers were suspicious when colony collapse disorder began that insecticides were causing the honeybee die-offs, and specifically nicotine-based insecticides. A year later, in July of 2008, German beekeepers reported that 50 up to 100% all of their hives died.
Jeez.
Yeah, after, and this ties right in to this brand new research, after pneumatic equipment was used to spray and plant corn seed in Germany covered with nicotine-based insecticide. And the reason it ended up blowing up into the air as it was being sprayed on the seeds, and it was contaminating nearby canola fields where beekeepers were being paid to put their honeybees out to pollinate the canola. And in some fields, 100% of the bees died. And the German farmers were some of the first to say, halt. Well, now, where we are today,
man,
this is a January 31st report that is finally making the news now in March.
After you had this 5 years ago.
Well, it's been coming, and I mean, I have, as you know, every report I've done on honeybees, I have said, everyone that I know behind the scenes keeps saying, it's not Nosema, it's not microwaves, it's not an Australian fungi. Those were opportunists or something in the environment that was hurting the bees because their immune systems were compromised. We're now talking about what the root problem is. And in the January 31st, 2012 issue of the American Chemical Society Journal, Environmental Science and Technology. It's Italian scientists from the University of Padua, and they are reporting, it's called, quote, assessment of the environmental exposure of honeybees to particulate matter containing neonicotinoid insecticides coming from corn-coated seeds, close quote. And the science team led by Andrea Tapar writes, quote, since seed coating with neonicotinoid insecticides such as clothianidin and imidacloprid was introduced in the late 1990s, European beekeepers have reported severe colony losses in the period of corn sowing, which is the spring.
So, Linda, what I want you to do is let's do a further story when you do your regular monthly reports for us. Thank you for what you did for us 5 years ago when everybody was laughing about this story. Mankind, folks, killing off the honeybees. And once the bees go, so does your food source. Thanks, Linda. I appreciate it. 32-year-old Jack Frozy of Pennsylvania. He died last year of a heart arrhythmia. Sorry to hear that. But 5 months later, his best friend received an email from him. How did it happen? Nobody knows. It simply said, did you hear me? I'm at your house. It's a strange story. Can the afterlife actually, through electronics, send emails, send messages? Maybe. Up next, we're talking about a book of insight. We're talking about the Ouija board. You know how I feel about the Ouija board. But Tina and Tilde, they dealt with the Ouija board, and we'll tell you what happened in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Now, you know how I feel about the Ouija board and some of the things that can happen when you play around with it. But two sisters have been experimenting with the Ouija board since they were teenagers. Tina Fiorda and Tilde Cameron, they're sisters. And as children, they had other types of worldly experiences that sparked their interest in the spiritual realm. Now, this curiosity led them to experiment with the Ouija board. For years, they played with the Ouija board. They asked it questions. They didn't take it seriously. One day, three entities somehow came through, identified themselves as their spirit guides. And from that day, the messages they received were of a completely different nature. They've written a book called The Book of Insight, and here they both are, Tina and Tilde, on Coast to Coast. Hello, you two. How are you, Tina?
I'm good, George. Thank you for having us on your show. We're really excited to be here.
Me too. And how's the sister, Tilde?
Oh, Tilde's doing fine. Thank you so much.
Great. Good to have you both with us. Okay. I stopped playing around with the Ouija board a few years ago because horrendous things would happen. You two seem to like it. You're still doing it. Has anything bad ever happened, Tina?
Well, once when we were quite young and we were in the beginning phases of our experimentation with the Ouija board, we had some spirit or entity come through and started cursing at us. And that was about as bad as it got for us. But in a way, it was a blessing in disguise because it was that anything could come through that portal. And it was because of that one incident that we began to take precautions whenever we started using the Ouija board after that.
Now, when these things happened to you, did you, you know, think, okay, it's the Ouija board, something's happening to the Ouija board?
At that time, we did think that it was the board or something coming through the board. And that's why we were quite concerned at the beginning when we had that experience. But now we realize that the board is really just a tool, and it's really the board is a piece of wood. It's a tool. We humans are the channels, and one thing to realize is that we humans are more powerful than we believe ourselves to be. We have psychic abilities that, you know, we have not even begun to really develop yet. And when you think about it, the human body is made out of almost three-quarters water. Our bones have a crystalline substance in it, and water is a conductor. So it makes me think that maybe our creator really put a lot more thought into the creation of the human body than we realize. And therefore, perhaps it is our human body that is the conductor and the receiver and transmitter of information, and the tool, such as the Ouija board or tarot cards or crystal balls or runestones, are really just the tools we use that facilitates this communication.
Now, Tina, when you and your sister Tilde started playing around with the Ouija board, did your folks, did your parents, did your friends tell you, hey, don't do that?
No, they didn't. I don't think our parents even really knew what the Ouija board was. And our parents always thought we were a little on the crazy side anyway. So, speak for yourself. So, no, we really didn't encounter anything like that. And at that time when we were first experimenting with the Ouija board, those horror stories that we hear of now, they just didn't exist. I think they became more prevalent with the release of the movie The Exorcist. And if you remember in that movie, the child, she was playing with a Ouija board and Captain Howdy came through. And ever since then, you know, movies that center about Ouija boards always center around some sort of horror that happens as a result of it.
Right, and this is Tilde speaking now. Before that time, and that was the early 70s, 1973, Ouija board had reached the height of its popularity in the 1920s and the 1960s. And in 1967, it became so popular that it outsold Monopoly. And the Ouija board was being advertised on television as, you know, the great game that you could play with your, on an evening out with a date. And there really wasn't any taboo when it came to the Ouija board. We, you know, people weren't experiencing any fears or negativity around it. And as Tina said, it probably started with that movie, The Exorcist, and kind of grew from there. And then, of course, we even have some urban legends around it as well. And but yeah, at the same time, we don't want to dismiss the fact that people have had negative experiences with it as well. That does certainly happen.
So, Tilde, you're not afraid of the Ouija board?
I'm not afraid of it. I mean, I can't say that I haven't had moments where I was suspicious, I guess you could say, or maybe a little nervous at times. But generally, we've had very, very positive and, you know, you could say enlightening experiences with it. So for us, we've been doing it, dare I say, over 30 years, probably 30 years now, and we only had the one negative experience. But up until, you know, from that point forward, everything we've experienced with it has actually been very positive.
All right, now take this the right way, but has anybody ever accused you two of being evil or a product of the devil or some kind of messenger from the dark side?
I think a lot of people I find are very fearful of it. And it's funny because Once we channeled this book, once we finished writing the book and realized, okay, we have a book now, we have a product, we kind of looked at each other and said, oh, goodness, now we're going to have to tell people where this book came from. We're going to have to say it was channeled through a Ouija board. And we were kind of, you know, almost nervous about what the responses would be. And you know, for the most part, though, it's interesting because we thought we were going to get really negative feedback, but we're actually getting really positive feedback from people. And although we thought, you know, more people than not would be very fearful of it, we were finding the opposite, and that kind of surprised us.
We have gotten some negative feedback, you know, people that said, oh, no, I wouldn't touch that thing. Or
right. And you can't blame them, right?
No.
I mean, I won't touch it.
Well, I read about your experience, yeah. George, in the studio. So,
oh my gosh, yeah.
Yes, I read about
it.
It
was bizarre.
Yeah, that was bizarre. But consider this. Did you ever consider throughout that experience or even in retrospect that perhaps you were the channel because you are someone who is in tune, and I believe that you are someone who has abilities that are more developed than most of the other people.
Well, actually, what I thought, because my producer at the time, Howard, was so negative about everything, And Howard listens to the show. He works at our affiliate in St. Louis. I love the kid. But he knows this. He's got a black cloud over his head. And we've talked about this for hours. I was convinced that it was the Ouija board working through him. I want to talk a little bit more about that and with both of you as we talk about your work, A Book of Insight, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We're talking with Tina Fiorda and Tilde Cameron, their sisters. We're talking about their Ouija board experience, their book, A Book of Insight. And my experience, of course, is it's very possible that my old producer in St. Louis might have had this negative energy that pulled some of that in. Tina, is that possible?
I believe it is possible because, as I was saying before, our bodies are conductors. We are transmitters and receivers of information. And not only that, but we can magnetize energy, and our thoughts and our belief systems also create our realities. So if we are engaged in negative belief structures, if we are engaged in negative thoughts, we can attract to us negative situations. So, you know, sometimes people walk around with clouds over their heads, mm-hmm. and they always wonder why negative things always happen to them. And it's because they are engaged in negative thinking and negative belief structures. So it's very important to analyze our beliefs, to analyze our thoughts, and to realize that our thoughts and beliefs do create our realities.
Tilde, why do you think you two are having good experiences?
You know, I think it's because we're just very careful in our approach. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, we had that very first experience that was negative for us. And we realized at that point that this isn't a game and this is something we have to be very careful with. So at that point, we sort of put our own system together. And the way we approach it is that, first of all, we have only positive intent. Anytime we start a session with the Ouija board, we make sure that our intentions are positive. We always do a meditation session ahead of time. We usually meditate for about half an hour to an hour. And we started a little ritual where we say a little prayer of protection, and we surround ourselves with an imaginary white light of protection. And this little ritual just makes us feel safer. As I said, we put positive intentions out there. And since we started doing this, we've never had a negative experience. It's just been positive. And we suggest anyone who does want to experiment with the Ouija board approach it in the same manner.
Tell me about the three spirit guides that approached you.
Well, we have three guides, Tilde and I, and they are Melanie, M, and Demna. That is how they identified themselves. And Melanie is Tilly's guide, and M and Demna are my guides. And they came through and identified themselves early on in our experiences, I would say after we were doing it for about maybe five years or more. And they identified themselves as our spirit guides. And at that time, we began to have a relationship with them. And whenever we would do the Ouija board, we would automatically connect with one of our spirit guides.
Did you trust them initially?
Yes, actually we did. It just felt right. And we trusted them because of the types of messages that they delivered to us. They were positive, loving messages. They were messages of guidance for us. And inside our souls, I guess you could say, it just felt right intuitively. There was no negativity attached to any of the messages. They did not try to lead us astray. So we never had any preconceived notions of anything negative coming to us other than that very first experience we had.
Do they have other mechanisms to contact us? What do you think, Tilde?
They do, absolutely, and that's something that they discussed with us in the book. One of the things that they stress to us is that we learn meditation. And what they said is that they connect to us through our intuition. And if we take on a regular practice of meditation, as little as 15 minutes a day, that helps us tune into our intuition. And basically our intuition is the voice of our guides, and often they will nudge us. They will try and nudge us in the right direction. Sometimes you get a feeling, maybe you're driving to work and you always take the same path, but for some reason, this one day, something tells you to take an alternate route to work. And because you take that alternate route to work, perhaps you avoided an accident, a fatal accident, perhaps. These feelings that you have, these little internal nudgings that we get, those are the voices of our intuition and the voices of our guides.
How soon, when you're playing with the Ouija board, do you start getting messages? Does it happen quickly, or does it take a while?
Very quickly. This is Tina. Very quickly. In the beginning, when we first started practicing with the Ouija board, it would take a fair amount of time. The planchette or the pointer would barely move, and we were very, very patient. And as we continued on and our practice grew, we've gotten to the point now where as soon as we put our fingers on the planchette, it just begins to move right away. And we have faith in it, and it just works for us.
Has there been anything startling, any specific warnings that have come through the Ouija board?
Not that I can think of. I mean, most of the messages have been fairly positive and fairly enlightening. Nothing really startling that's come through to us. So far, so good.
So good. But one thing they do tell us, and they delivered it to us for our book, is they did tell us that we have to take care of our planet. That we are getting to a phase now that we really need to be aware of what we're doing to our planet, and we need to wake up. And part of the reason they delivered this book was to help us develop spiritually, but also to give us a gentle wake-up call about what we are doing to our planet Earth and how we can learn to accept each other and to live with each other in love and peace.
So you would recommend the Ouija board to just about anybody?
I don't know if I would necessarily recommend it to just about anybody. It is something that you do have to be careful with. I know it's sold in toy stores as a game, but we always tell people don't treat it as a game. If you're going to experiment with a Ouija board, you have to approach it cautiously, and you have to be very careful with it. So I wouldn't recommend it to just anyone. And even though Tina and I began the practice in our early teen years, I don't know that I would even necessarily recommend it to anyone that is, in their teen years. I would suggest maybe to adults who really understand what they're doing. And like I said, do proceed cautiously with it.
Name of the book is A Book of Insight. Tina, tell me exactly what's in the book.
Wow, there is so much in the book. A Book of Insight, how would I describe it? I would describe it as a spiritual manual for our lives. It explores answers to a lot of our most fundamental questions in life, questions that we've had all our lives at one time or another, questions about God, reality, life, death, what happens to us when we die, are heaven and earth real? I mean, are heaven and hell real? Are we alone in this universe, or is there other life out there? Right down to how can we create the lives we want for ourselves? There's just so much information in this book. It's just amazing.
I think that basically all of those questions that most of us have wondered at one point or another, those questions that deal oftentimes with the metaphysical or invisible realm that we can't really find answers for, those are the types of questions that we ask. And we got the answers, and I'll tell you, we were pretty astounded by the information that was being delivered to us. And we found that the more questions we asked, as our guides were delivering the answers to us, the answers they were delivering to us were causing us to come up with more and more questions, and it just went on and on, and ultimately what we ended up with was a sort of a question and answer format for the book. And as I said, we were pretty amazed with the information they were delivering to us.
What have you both learned about life after death because of these experiences?
Well, one thing that our guides did say to us is death is not something to be feared. You know, it's a big unknown to all of us, and I think that most of us have a fear of death. And they said to us, it's nothing to be fearful of. Death is a very simple transition. It's very natural. Think of it as when you go to sleep at night, eventually you fall asleep and you go into a dream state and you don't even realize it's happening. It's that simple of a transition.
Super. I met you two at an event. Where was the event?
You did.
Because I do like 15 a year now. I can't even remember where I go.
This was in Vancouver in 2000. I believe it was 2008.
Okay.
Broadcast here.
All right. Absolutely. I had a great time out there.
Mm.
I love Canada. Going back there in June, going to Toronto, as a matter of fact.
I know. I heard. We actually want you to come back to Vancouver.
Vancouver's a great town, too. Great hockey town. Sure is.
So, one of these years, we'll win the Stanley Cup.
not over my Red Wings, let me tell you. Okay, so now these spirit guides that are out there, do we all have them attached to us individually?
Yes, we all have spirit guides, and this is something that they want us to know. They want us to know that we are never alone in our journey through life. We make a contract with them before we birth onto this planet, is what they've told us. And they are with us the entire lifetime. And the purpose of the spirit guides in our lives is to help keep us on the path that we chose before we birthed onto this planet. They refer to our planet or our dimension as a dimension of limited awareness. And because when we're born onto this planet, we forget why we came here. And their purpose is to help keep us on the path we chose. And they say that they have two requirements from us in order for us to connect with them. They require meditation, and they require us to listen to our intuition. And we can develop a relationship with them and start to feel their presence in our lives.
Are they our guardian angels, or is that something else?
Well, I suppose you could refer to them as our guardian angels as well. They are protectors, and they want us to know that we're not alone. And when we're going through, you know, traumatic times in our lives, and we're going through difficult times, they're always with us, and they're always helping us through those times. We're never alone. So in a sense, you could look at them as guardian angels.
What has been the worst experience you might have had with the Ouija board?
You know, our worst experience was the one that we talked about. It was just that in the very beginning.
All right.
We had someone come through and curse. And that was the first and last negative experience we ever had with it.
If that was it, you lucked out, both of you.
We did luck out. You're right.
So you continue to use it. Is it more of a tool now? Are you curious? Why do you keep doing it?
You know, we've done it for so long now that it just seems so natural to us. It's anytime we have a question, you know, questions that perhaps most people may go to a psychic to get answers from, we'll pull out the Ouija board and we'll talk to our guides. And yeah, it's just we've been doing it for so long; it's just become so natural to us. And plus, we have friends and relatives who often want us to pull the Ouija board out and do readings for them as well. So we also do that for friends.
Or even to connect with their departed loved ones. We've a couple of our cousins whose father passed away had us pull the board out and try and connect with our uncle after he passed away. And so, and they find comfort in messages that come through from the other side.
Do these spirit guides give us any insight into what could happen in the future?
Yes, they have. We have what's called probable and alternate realities. And they talk about probable realities as spin-off realities that spin off from every action that we take. Every action that we take leads into many probable realities. And in one of our probable realities, there is the possibility that we could annihilate or damage ourselves. But we can control that. So what they have told us is that we are on a path that is not meant for us, and we need to awaken, because mankind is, his intention is to grow spiritually as a spiritual being and to awaken our third eye. So they do have a gentle admonishment for us, and they do want us to know that we are in control of our future. We create our realities, and depending on our thoughts and beliefs, we can either create the best reality possible for our futures, or we can create a negative reality. It's up to us, because we have free will and because we are co-creators with our source. And what we refer to as God, they refer to as our source. And because we are fragments of the source, or fractals of the source in human form, we have direct connection to the source's energy and power, and we are co-creators in our own dimension. So we can create our future. It's up to us.
Tina, how do we know that you're not being tricked through the Ouija board?
You know, we've thought about that ourselves, and the answers and the guidance that we are given are so full of love and so full of guidance, that and it just feels so right within our souls that we just feel and know inside of our hearts that we are not being tricked.
Yeah, and we did question it in the beginning when we first started receiving the information for this book. We questioned it. It wasn't, I'd say, about until we were into the second chapter and had started reading back all the information that was being delivered to us, that we finally started trusting that this was real and it was coming from a positive source. Because as Tina said, the information just resonated with us. It felt good. It felt right. And so from that point on, we just let go and we let the messages come through.
Interesting. That's pretty fascinating as well. What would you recommend people do, those people who are going to use the Ouija board, whether I tell them to or not? What would you recommend to them, how they use it, what they should do, just so they don't incur anything evil?
Well, you know, people are going to use it no matter what you say to them. So what we would recommend, the first thing, and this is what our guides tell us to do, is meditate and spend about half an hour to an hour in meditation. And the reason for this is because meditation helps to raise our vibrations. And our guides need to lower their vibrations. So in essence, we meet them halfway. So the first thing we would do is meditate. The next thing you do is you need to have intent on who you want to connect with. Because using a Ouija board, it's like making a telephone call. If you pick up the phone and you dial a random number, you don't know who's going to pick up the line. But if you have the intent of phoning someone specific and you have that person's phone number and you dial that number, that is who you're going to connect with. So intention is very important. So once you meditate and you have intention of who and what you want to connect with, then the next thing we do is we surround ourselves, we visualize ourselves surrounded by white light, and we say a prayer of protection. And we ask for the protection of our guides, and we ask for the protection of God, and we ask that only positive and loving guides come through to us with messages. So we do take precautions, and we advise anybody that's going to experiment with a Ouija board to take these precautions also.
You know, in addition to, of course, the verbiage that comes through because of the planchette, have you ever heard voices because of this?
No, I've never heard voices.
I've never heard voices as we were practicing with the board, but I, because of our meditation practice, our guides would not begin a session with us until we had meditated. And I found that during the delivery of this book, I was starting to have some interesting experiences, and a couple of times I heard a voice whisper in my ear. But it wasn't during the actual Ouija session.
Okay, well, stay with us, both of you. We're talking about a book of insight, Wisdom from the Other Side. It's about Ouija boards. And we're going to take your phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Especially if you've had a Ouija board experience, you might want to share that with us as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.